Yeah, it's
when he didn't turn it on, when he gave his comments.
Yeah.
That would have been far better. The beginning of this year was commenting on earrings and light. Earrings.
Let's focus.
We're
going to talk about Yehoshua crossing the Jordan. That's what we're going to talk about. So we read through chapters 3 and 4 last week. Oh, yeah. Last week's share is online. And we ended up with a number of questions in this chapter. We didn't really sort out anything substantive. Go through the text and try to understand what the issues are. Some of the issues are the repetitive language, specifically with regards to the Kohanim who carry the ark. How many times it has to tell us that the Kohanim are carrying the ark rather than the Levium. But there are a number of other issues as well, and I want to try to work through them systematically. So let's start from the beginning of chapter 3 again. There is a handout, which we'll get to in a moment. No, you can't.
I like
that. Okay. So let's go back to the beginning of chapter 3. Vayashkem Yehoshua baboker, vayisu me'ashitim, vayevo ad hayarden hu v'cho b'nei Yisrael, vayalinu sham terem yavoru. Yeshua gets up in the morning, he takes b'nei Yisrael from Shittim, they get to the Jordan. It's a three-day journey to get to the edge of the Jordan. And then the officers begin to go through the camp and they instruct the people as follows. As you see, the Ark of the Covenant and the Kohanim carrying it. Then you will walk, and then you will travel, and walk after it. In other words, in a certain sense, the Aron served the purpose of,
a guide,
the tour guide. The director says, you know where they should go. And that was part of the role that the travel of the Aron served in the Midbar as well. When they would travel, when the Ark would travel, the people would travel with it. When the ark would rest, then the people would rest. It was a understanding that the ark led them through the desert. Well, here, essentially, you have the similar idea where the ark is leading them to and through the Jordan. It's not exactly the same, and I'll explain why in a moment. Nonetheless, you have to keep a distance of 2,000 amma, 2,000 cubits, which is between 3,000 and 4,000 feet. So somewhere between, let's say, half and three-quarters of a mile. Al tikrivu elav, don't get too close to the Aron. Leman asher tedu et haderech asher telchu va, ki lo avartem baderech mitmol shel shom. So that you should know the derech that you are going, because you haven't gone in this way, in this path, yesterday or the day before. What is that? What's the connection between that half a sentence and the first half a sentence? Non sequitur, I think. What's going on in that verse?
But is it saying that this is uncharted territory?
Well, it is uncharted territory, but why should... Yeah, but what does the distance have to do with 2,000 amot? What does the distance of 2,000 amot have to do with, in order that you should know the path that you're going? So there's two. I think there's two ways to understand this verse. One is the assumption that if the camp of Israel is here, and the ark is traveling before them here, then versus the camp here and the ark here. Why would you want so much distance between the camp and the ark? And the verse seems to say that the reason for the distance is leman asher tedu et haderech asher telchuva, that the purpose of the distance is so that you should know the way. What does that have to do with it? So the simple meaning of the verse seems to indicate that you have to be able to see the ark, and when it's this close to the front of the camp, the only people who can see it is the people in the front. The people in the back can't see the ark. Whereas if it's 2,000 amot away, then your line of sight is much clearer for everybody. That seems to be the indication, except that if it's purely for the sake of knowing which way to go, all I really need is for the people in front of the ark to be able to follow the ark. Everybody else follows the front people. So why do I have to see the ark at all? So the other way to read this verse is that there's, what's the expression, a dangling participle? The expression, or the dangling modifier, the expression leman asher tedu et haderech asher telchuva is not a explanation of why you have to keep a distance from the ark, but rather an explanation of why you're following the ark. Why is the ark going before you? Atem tis'umim kumchem alachtem acharav, you will go and follow the ark leman asher tedu et haderech, in order that you should know the way. Separate from that issue, however, there is a requirement which we have yet to define its purpose of keeping the ark a distance of 2,000 amot away. So I leave that as an open question. Why is it that the ark has to travel so far in front of the rest of the camp? I'm not convinced that it's purely for the sake of being able to see the ark so you know which way to go. First of all, there isn't that much, it's not that complicated to know that you're going straight into the ark. But besides that, it's not. Right? But besides that, it's not. You don't need to actually see the ark visibly just to be able to know which way to go. The front of the camp needs to see the ark. They follow the ark. The rest of the camp behind, second and third rows and beyond, they would simply follow the people in front of them. So I leave it as an open question as to why it was necessary for the ark to travel so far in front of the people. We'll come to that in a moment. We'll come to that in a moment. They walked in a very different formation when they went in the desert. We'll talk about that momentarily.
Half a mile, three quarters of a mile is a great distance. You really have to concentrate.
Right. Although it's flat ground, so if it's flat ground, it's not so hard. But still. Why could you see it? Why could you see it at such a distance? Nope. Was carried on the shoulders of the Kohanim, not raised up that far. Why could you see it from a distance?
Had an aura of light about it.
Close. More than light.
Oh, Ananei.
That's right, because wherever the ark traveled, so did the Ananei HaKavod.
So the Ananei HaKavod could be seen anyway from a distance.
Well, it depends on how high they hovered over the ark, and if they're here, they're much harder to see than if they're over here. Number one. And number two, remember I once told you, did we talk about the relationship between the Anan and the Esh? Remember we talked about that? We have a perception of the Ananei HaKavod being a cloud, and this fire that accompanied them, right? Esh. Ananei HaKavod bayom ve'esh balayla. They have the this relationship of the cloud by day and the fire by night. Where does that come from? The simplest pshat of the relationship between the Anan and the Esh is that the Anan is not an Anan in the sense of clouds. We translate it as clouds of God's glory, but it's not a cloud. At least a cloud in the classic sense of the term. The manifestation of God in Tanakh is always through fire. Correct. Manifestation of God in Tanakh is always through fire. From the Sneh to Mamre HaSinai. The snare was a bush that did not get consumed. Ma'amar Hasina Yumarek Kvod Hashem Ke'esh Ochelet B'rosh Ha'har. The vision of God was a consuming fire at the top of the mountain. Nadav and Aviu, remember this, we read it this week, in the Parashat Shemini. Nadav and Aviu. The fire went out from the Kodesh HaKadoshim and consumed the offering on the altar. And this fire went out from the Kodesh HaKadoshim and consumed them. Nadav and Aviu were standing in the wrong place at the wrong time. So this fire is an Esh Ochelet. That's always the manifestation of the Shekhinah, is always in the form of a fire, at least in the context of a manifestation which is unforgiving, consuming, and destructive. But there's another component to the Shekhinah. And the other component of the Shekhinah is that it appears in the context of Rachamim. It appears in the context of God's compassion and God's mercy and the Midah of Rachamim. And then the fire, there's two components to fire. There's fire and there is smoke created by the fire. And the smoke covers the fire, hides the fire. If you look at a fire by day, you can't see the fire as much. What you see by day is the smoke. At night, you don't see the smoke. You see the fire. So the notion that the Shekhinah accompanied them through the wilderness, through the Midbar, as fire by night and cloud by day, is essentially the Shekhinah went with them. You saw the smoke by day and the Esh at night. There was always that accompanying Shekhinah. Same thing. Two halves of the same manifestation. Two parts of the same.
I never heard that before. The term cloud of fire, that's the cloud created by the smoke.
Right. And you have it in a number of places, for example, the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur, when the Kohen goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and he brings Ketoret. And he brings Ketoret and he puts the Ketoret on the frying pan and he goes to the Kodesh HaKadoshim and he lights the Ketoret and he fills the Kodesh HaKadoshim with smoke. Right, with the Yashan. Right, it's essentially the same idea. So what you had in accompanying the ark was the Shekhinah, manifest either as fire or as cloud. And I'm assuming that it simply hovered over the Aron, wherever the Aron went, the Shekhinah went with it. So you didn't necessarily need the Aron to be 2,000 cubits in front of you to be able to see the Shekhinah. You could see it wherever you were, because it was higher up. But again, I leave that as a question as to why it was necessary for the Aron to be 2,000 cubits in front of them. Partially, perhaps, to see, and they could see it certainly, even though it was so far away because of the Ananei HaKavod, but I think that there's more here than that we need to explore. Pasuk Hey, Vayomu Yoshua El Ha'am Hitkadashu. Yeshua says to the people, prepare yourselves. Ki machar ya'aseh Hashem b'kibachem nifla'ot. Tomorrow you are in store for great wonders. Vayomu Yoshua El HaKohanim Lemor. Su'u et aron habrit v'ivru lifnei ha'am. V'yisu et aron habrit v'yachu lifnei ha'am. Yeshua instructs the Kohanim to take the ark and go before the people. Why is that significant? Let's talk about the place of the aron. And then the other issue here that I addressed last week a little bit was the repetitive emphasis on the fact that the Aron was always carried here by the Kohanim, Nosei HaAron, unlike the normal group that was responsible for carrying the Ark, which was the Levium from B'nai Kahat. So let's talk about the place of the Aron first. In relationship to the rest of the people, where is the Aron situated? In relationship to the rest of the people, where is the Aron situated? In front, at a distance. And in front, at a distance. The place of the Aron is an interesting issue because it constantly moves. Where it sits in relationship to the rest of the people seems to be a subject of focus in wherever the Aron travels. So here the Torah goes out, the Navi goes out of its way to place the Aron not only in front of the people, but at a distance from the people. In Perek Vav,
where does it start out? Because it has to pass.
I'm assuming it starts in the Mishkan. They take it out of the Mishkan, and then they move it to, they take apart the Mishkan, and they carry it, and they move it to the front of the camp. Where it starts out, I don't know.
Because it says it passes before the people, so.
Meaning, yeah, because when they traveled in the desert, it wasn't in front of the people, it was in the Mishkan, which was always in the middle. Mm-hmm. We're going to get to that in a moment. Well, actually, let's do that first. Open up the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. Let's take a look at the camp of Israel as it traveled through the desert. Now, the formation of the camp of Israel in the desert is a subject we will come back to later in the year, if not this year, the next year, because it's significant for understanding how the land of Israel is divided by tribes. We think of the formation of the desert of the camp in the desert as just a structure to travel in. In fact, it was the foundation of how the tribes would be laid out in the land of Israel. So we'll map out the formation in the desert and the formation in the land of Israel, what changes took place and how that worked. But we'll get there. It's a subject of discussion later in Sefer Yehoshua. But for now, Perek Aleph of Bamidbar is the first census where they count each tribe. And remember, the census in the desert is a military census. So each tribe is essentially counted for the size of its army and its sequence. Take a look at the order of the tribes, starting with chapter 1, verse 20, Perek Aleph Hasakhaf. Vayu b'nei Reuven b'cho Yisrael. The first tribe listed is Reuven. I'm not interested in the numbers right now as much as the sequence. The sequence starts with Reuven, then Shimon, then God. Actually, list me the tribes as they are. Perek Aleph. We have Reuven, Shimon, God. Next. Yehuda. Yisachar. Zvulun. Good. Binyamin. Dan. Naphtali. Good. Okay. That's the list of the tribes in Perek Aleph. Correct? That's how the tribes are listed in Perek Aleph? Yep. Reuven, Shimon, Gad, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, Ephraim, Manasseh, Binyamin, Dan, Asher, and Naphtali.
No,
did I miss something?
No, God is in the one who called
in. No. God? Perek Aleph and Bamidbar, God is Pasuk of Dalet.
Yeah.
Okay. Perek Bet. Now, what Perek Bet does is it restructures the camp into Dgalim, because it's going to place a group of tribes on each side of the Mishkan. So we're going to take these 12 tribes. Notice which tribe is missing? Levi. And Levi is not here because? Separate census because? Wasn't part of the army, correct. They were counted for the Mishkan service, they were counted from Chodesh Lamala, from a month and up, they had a different service to be performed. There's a completely different structure to the camp. The next piece of it is going to take the camp of Israel and divide, the next perek is going to take the camp of Israel and divide them into four degalim. Each degel, in a military sense, a degel is a, it's a banner, it's a flag, it's a color of a particular division in the army. So the Degalim in Perek Bet, so let's look at them carefully. So each paragraph in Perek Bet defines a Degel. A Degel is defined as a chief Shevet, and then two Shvatim that were assigned to each Degel. So Degel Machane Reuven will have the tribes of Shimon and Gad assigned to it, but the banner is defined as the Degel of Reuven. So starting from the beginning of the Perek, what are the Degelim and what is the sequence of the tribes? First Degel mentioned. Careful. Starting from the beginning of the Perek. Pasuk Gimel. Chanim Kedma Mizracha. On the, this is north. East is here. Yehuda is first. And who goes with Yehuda? Yisachar and Zvolun. Next camp. That's Degel, Kedma Mizracha. Perek Yud. Degel Machane Reuven Temana. Temana is? South. So Reuven is the second Degel, and with Reuven goes? Shimon and Gad. Okay? Next camp. Then Pasuk Yud Zayin, Nasa Or Machane Halevi'im B'tocha Machanot, then the camp of the Shechina. So if I do it sequentially, I have Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvolun, Reuven. Let's do it this way. Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvolun, Reuven, Shimon, Gad, and then I have the Mishkan, followed by next camp. Degel Machane Ephraim Yama. Yama is west. Ephraim, notice we are going, we're going clockwise in a circle around the Mishkan. Starting from the east, we're going in a complete circle. Degel Machane Ephraim, who goes with Ephraim? And Binyamin. Ephraim, next is Ephraim. And with Ephraim comes Menashe and Binyamin. And the final camp, which is in the north, is Degel Machane Dan. And with Dan goes and Asher. Okay. Asher, Naphtali, Naphtali, and Asher. That's the structure. So this is Perek Aleph. This is Perek Beth. Notice and this is the structure that's created as they traveled through the desert, as they camped through the desert. How they traveled, I'll show you in a moment. But this is how they camped. So now look at the sequence of the tribes as they're listed in Perek Aleph. One of the great mysteries is what order the tribes are listed in. Here I have a simple census of each tribe, starting with Reuven. And the Mefarshim asked the obvious question, why this sequence? Reuven, Shimon, Gad, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, Ephraim, Menashe, Binyamin, Dan, Asher, Naphtali. Where's the structure here? It's not chronological. It's not be'imahot. What's going on here? In Perek Bet already, I understand the structure. I've defined each Degel, who's on which side of the Mishkan. But what's going on here in Perek Aleph? The answer is very simple. Correct. It's exactly right. All I've done is I flattened the structure of the Degelim. Here I have the structure of the Degelim, Yehuda, Reuven, Ephraim, and Dan, together with each one of them two tribes. What I've done in Perek Aleph is I simply flattened this structure. Reuven, Shimon Gad. Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zvolun. Ephraim, Menashe and Binyamin, Dan, Asher and Naphtali. Those are your four camps. And then Perek Bet sequences them around the Mishkan. Yehuda first, then Reuven, then Ephraim, and then Dan. So the listing in Perek Bet is essentially identical to the listing in Perek Aleph with one difference. They named the Degelim, but what's the difference in the sequence? Reuven and Yehuda are switched. The sequence of Reuven and Yehuda is reversed. That's the only difference. In Perek Aleph, it starts with Reuven. Perek Bet starts with Yehuda. Why? It's a very good question. I'm glad you asked. Probably was going to tell you at some point, but why is it an interesting issue? Let's start with Perek Aleph. Why should Reuven be first? He's the oldest. He's the firstborn. Why in Perek Bet do I put Yehuda first? And when they travel, they flatten this structure. Right? They have to travel. There's a machloket Rishonim, actually, how they traveled. One shita says that they traveled in exactly this structure, in a box formation. But Yehuda, let me show you the psukim. Perek, take a look in Perek Yud. Bamidbar Perek Yud. How did they travel? Beginning of Perek Yud, actually starting from Pasuk Yud Aleph. The 20th of Iyar is the first time they actually traveled from High Sinai, a year later. They traveled according to their, from Midbar Sinai. The first time they traveled by God's command. The camp of Reuven of Yehuda first. Then and with him was Yisachar and Zvulun. Then they would take apart the Mishkan. Right, and Bnei Gershon would take apart the Kelim. They would travel next. Next pasuk Yedchet v'nasad dego machane Reuven letzivotam. Then the camp of Reuven went second, and with him was Shimon and Gad. And then part of the Levim, I'm not interested in the Levim so much right now. Perachav Bet, Venasad Dego Machane Bnei Ephraim Litzivotam. And with them was Menashe and Binyamin. And finally, in Pasuk Chafei, Venasad Dego Machane Bnei Dan. So the sequence of how they traveled was exactly this sequence. They traveled in formation. Yehuda, Reuven, Mishkan, Ephraim, Dan. There's a machloket Rishonim whether or not they traveled in box formation or they traveled in a linear formation. But either way, the Mishkan travels in the middle and the Aron here in the midst of the camp. Reu the first, Reuven second, Ephraim third, Dan fourth. Why that sequence? And when they enter into Eretz Yisrael, however, the sequence changes. When they enter into Eretz Yisrael, when they cross the Jordan, after they cross the Jordan, the sequence changes. The formation changes and the sequence changes. The formation changes with regards to the placement of the Aron. That we'll talk about. That's where we're going to come back to. The Aron is in front of them, 2,000 cubits, by the crossing of the Yarden. So somehow, when they cross the Yarden, they have to take the Aron from here and bring it to the front of the camp. But the whole formation structure changes. Why? Take a look in Perek Vav. Perek Vav is the destruction of... Yehoshua Perek Vav. Sorry, I have to tell you what sefer I'm in. Let's go back to Yehoshua Perek Vav. Yehoshua Perek Vav is the conquest of Yericho. I'm jumping ahead of ourselves, but that's all right. I don't like to stay in one place too long.
Yeah.
You noticed?
It's hard to keep nuts because
you're going to get quoted.
I meant in Tanakh, thank you very much. Wow.
Say that louder.
Hey, listen.
That's a very sensitive.
I see that. Wow. I see that. Perek Vav. Thank you very much. Vayomer Hashem Yehoshua. This is the formation as how they would encircle Yericho. Vayomer Hashem Yehoshua Re'ein Etati Biyadcha Et Yericho. I've given into your hands the city of Yericho, ve'et malkah gibrei chayil, its king, and its warriors, sabotem et ha'ir kol anshei mechama. Go and take your men of war and go circle the city. Hakif et ha'ir pamachat kot aseh sheshit yamim. Surround the city once for 6 days. You're not that familiar with the structure here. Uvayom ha'shvi'i tasobot ha'ir shev pamim. On the seventh day, you will circle the city 7 times. What ritual of Judaism today follows this sequence? Hakafot of Hashanas, correct. One hakaf around the Mizbeach, around the Shulchan, each of the 6 days of the Chag, until day 7, when it is Simchas Shana Rabbah, and we go around 7 times. V'akohanim yitku'u b'shofarot. And the Kohanim will blow the shofar. V'aya b'mshoch b'keren hayovel, when they will blow the sound of the shofar. Yovel is a shofar. Kisham achem et kol ha-shofar, yaviyu kol ha-am teruah gdola. V'nafla chomat ha-ir tachtea v'alu ha-am ish negdo. 7th day, they'll blow the shofar, the people will scream, the walls create an earthquake, the walls will fall down. V'yikra Yehoshua b'nun el kohanim ha-yomer aleihem. He calls over his trusty kohanim and says to them, su'u et aron ha-brit. Carry the ark. Of course, who's going to carry the ark? The Kohanim. They carried it across the Yarden. They're going to carry it for Yericho. Su'ut aron ha-brit, v'shiv'a Kohanim yisu shiv'a shofrot yovlim lifnei aron Hashem. Before the ark, in front of the ark, there'll be 7 Kohanim carrying 7 shofarot. So unlike when they crossed the Yarden, and the ark went first, here, the ark is carried by Kohanim, but in front of the Kohanim were shofarot. Let's go on. Vayomer el ha'am, ivru v'sobu et ha'ir. Go and surround the city. V'hechalutz ya'avor lifnei aron Hashem. And the chalutz will go in front of the aron. What are the chalutz? Modern Hebrew, chalutz is a pioneer. In biblical Hebrew, what are the chalutz? What is a chalutz? The front line soldiers are the chalutzim. We've already discussed this once. Who are the front line soldiers? Who are the chalutz? Reuven, Shimon, and Gad. Reuven, Shimon, and Gad. That tribe that was given their land east of the Yarden are the chalutzim. They will stay in front. They will be the front lines of every campaign in the land of Israel until the land is conquered. Chalutz lifnei Hashem. Vayhi kemo Yeshua el ha'am v'shiva kohanim nosim shiva shofarot ha'yovlim lifnei Hashem avdu v'taku b'shofarot. The 7 kohanim carrying the 7 shofarot went before the people. V'aron brit Hashem holech achareihem. And following the aron, following the kohanim went the aron. V'achalutz holech lifnei ha'kohanim tok'ei ha'shofarot. And in front of the kohanim with the shofarot are the chalutzim. V'ameasef holech acharei Aaron, and the rest of the camp, or the gathering, the tribe that's defined as the gather, whereas was usually done, meaning the rest of the camp was behind the Aaron. So the camp in, as they went through Yericho, as they went through Yericho, what was the sequence of the camp? Who is first? The chalutz. The chalutz is Reuven, Shimon, Gad. Then came the Kohanim and the Shofarot. Then came the Aron. And then the rest of the camp, Me'asef, which starts with Dega Machane Yehuda, Dega Machane Ephraim, Dega Machane Dan. Interesting.
So does that in any way explain them? It doesn't help in understanding the distance.
Not yet. We'll come back to that. We're not there yet.
Right.
Okay, there are three different sequences going on here. Right? There are three different structures going on here. This is exactly my point. There is structure number one, which is how they went through the desert. This is how they went through the desert. Yehuda first, Reuven second, Aaron in the middle, Ephraim, and then Dan. Encamped either in box formation or linear formation. The tribes are listed in Perek Aleph of Bamidbar in the same structure, except Reuven is first. Because Reuven, Shimon, and Gad are all encamped east of the Yarden. They're all part of the same group.
I thought already that Reuven...
Why it's Reuven, Gad, and half of Menashe.
Yeah.
Reuven, Gad, and half of Menashe. Okay, why Shimon is there? Did we talk about Shimon at all? We haven't talked about Shimon? Didn't get a Nachla. We didn't get the Shimon. Okay. Did we not talk about Shimon, why they lose their Nachla? I think we talked about that at the very beginning of the year, that Shimon was supposed to have a nachla and they lost it at Baal Peor, but the place where they were supposed to have their nachla was together with Reuven and Gad, because the degel is Reuven, Shimon, and Gad. So the logical trio for east of the Yarden is always Reuven, Shimon, and Gad. Shimon loses their actually. This is incorrect. This is the one piece that's not correct. This is Reuven and Gad. Let's call it half of Menashe, and Shimon ends up part of Shevet Yehuda. But but that's only because of the Chayt Baal Peor. Before that, in the Midbar, Shimon is together with Reuven because Reuven, Shimon, and Gad are supposed to inherit together. I'm sure we talked about this. Sort of remember it, right? This is supposed to be the area of Reuven, Shimon, and Gad. This is Yehuda. This is Ephraim, and this is Dan. By the way, let me show you something. Do you see Binyamin in the middle? Mm-hmm. Okay, Binyamin is called Yedid Hashem. Yishkon levetach alav. Lev chovev kol hayom. Moshe's bracha to Binyamin is that the Shechina will rest on Shevet Binyamin. It's bracha in Vezot HaBracha. If you look at Binyamin as the Shevet that will house the Shechina, look at the structure of the Shvatim carefully. Who is east of Binyamin? Dagon Machane Reuven. Who is south of Binyamin? Yehuda. Who is north of Binyamin? Ephraim. And who is west of Binyamin? Dan. Which is essentially Yehuda. Forget the location, because the location switches. We'll talk about that. But the locations of Yehuda, Reuven, Ephraim, and Dan, those are the four Shvatim that surrounded the Mishkan in the desert, and they are the four Shvatim that surround Shevet Binyamin in Eretz Yisrael. You see how the structure goes from the Midbar to the Nachla. That's not an accident. What ends up happening simply is that Reuven and Yehuda switch places. Right? If you were to look at this structure here, turn it around. Turn it around. It's a mirror image. It's a mirror image. Okay? You put Dan here. If you flip it that way, you know what I'm talking about? If you flip it on it as a mirror,
right,
then Dan becomes here, Ephraim becomes here, Reuven comes here, and Yehuda comes here. But if you do that, but But Reuben and Yehuda switch places because? Why did Reuben and Yehuda switch places? Because Reuben asked to stay east of the Yarden. Somebody had to be east of the Yarden. Reuben asked to be east of the Yarden, so the position of Yehuda and Reuben switch. Well, it's all. I mean, that's what the, that's what we just read. The Pesukim in the Torah, and Sefer Yehoshua. But the sequence. Now, let me just talk for a moment about why this particular sequence of how they're camped in the desert, and why does it switch from Perek Aleph to Perek Bet? Perek Aleph, Reuven is first, because he's the eldest. Perek Bet, which defines. And remember, in Perek Aleph, there's no mention of the Degel. Perek Bet, Yehuda is first. Why? He's the leadership. Let's link it back to the Nachal of Eretz Yisrael. In Perek Bet, which is of Bamidbar, which is before Chet HaMeraglim, where are they entering Eretz Yisrael from? They're entering from the south. The kickoff point, therefore, into Eretz Yisrael is the city of Kadesh, which is where they send the spies from, which is Shevet Yehuda. So essentially, they travel in a formation that leads them into Eretz Yisrael according to the tribe that is supposed to inherit first. Yehuda always conquers first. Yehuda is the first ones to go and take their territory. In Sefer Yehoshua, they will be the first ones to go and conquer the south in Hebron. In Sefer Shoftim, Mi'ale Barishana, Yehuda Barishana. Yehuda always goes first, as far as the Nachla goes. We'll get to that. That's in the beginning of Sefer Shoftim. It's a question of whether that. Well, we'll get to Yeshua too. But as far as territory goes, they're supposed to go into Eretz Yisrael from the south. So it makes sense that the tribe that leads the charge is Shevet Yehuda. After Chet HaMeraglim, they're going to go around the long way. They're going to go into Eretz Yisrael from the east. And by the time they get there and Reuven asks to stay in the east, they're entering into Eretz Yisrael according to from a position where the first tribe tribal territory belongs to Reuven. So the formation shifts to put Reuven first, partially because it's the Chalutz, partially because they're entering from Shevet Reuven, rather than the original plan, which was to enter from Shevet Yehuda. So the formation of how they travel is a military formation based on the structure of the camp, as well as the structure of the Nachla, of how they're going to inherit and divide the actual territory of the land of Israel. What does that do for the Aron? How does that explain to us what's going on with the Aron? So let's go back to the source page that you have. Does everybody have a copy of the source page from last week? Well, it's a good idea to. Anybody else?
Floating from heaven here.
There you go. Anybody else? Anybody else need? Pass that to shift. Okay, take a look at source number one. By the way, what I've just done here on the board is the chart at the top of the page. Just see it. But I figured if you just see the chart, you wouldn't really, it wouldn't mean as much as actually charting it out line by line. But that's essentially the same structure. So here's an interesting discussion in the Gemara and Sota about our sugya. Tanu Rabbanan, Ketzad Avu Yisrael Et HaYarden. How did they cross the Yarden? B'chol Yom, Aron Nosea Achar Shnei Dgalim. Every day in the desert, on the normal journey through the desert, the Ark traveled after the first two tribes, first two Dgalim, first two banners, Reuven and Yehuda. And today, on the other hand, The ark travels first. As it says, Hinei Aron Habrit, Adon, Hinei Aron Habrit, Adon Kol Aretz Over Lifnechem Beyadeh. Second of all, B'chol Yom Bayom, Leviyim Nosim Et Aron. Every other day, the Leviyim are carrying the ark. V'hayom Nosu Kohanim. Today, the Leviyim are carrying the ark. Sorry, the Kohanim. Sh'nemar V'yake Noach Kapot Aglea Kohanim Nosei Aron Hashem. Why would be that particular verse? I'm not sure. There's about 100 of them that talk about the Kohanim Nosei Aron Hashem. Then the Gemara goes on and says, Tanya Rabbi Yossi Yomer B'shlosha Mekomot Nasu Kohanim Et Aron Kishavu Et Hayarden Kishasevu Et Yericho Kishichziru L'mkomo. Only three times the Kohanim ever carried the ark. Crossing of the Yarden, the conquest of Yericho, and when the ark was always put back into the Kodesh HaKadosh, because the Levim couldn't enter the Kodesh HaKadosh. Divan Shenitbalu Raglei Kohanim B'mayim Chazu HaMayim L'Achorahem. Okay, that's a separate issue. So what essentially is the Gemara suggesting? The Gemara is suggesting that the two oddities in the story of the crossing of the Yarden structurally are interconnected. The Gemara links the fact that the Aron is traveling, not only is it traveling first, but it's traveling first at a distance of 2,000 cubits. So the How do I do this? Can I erase the this middle one? So I have the Aron first, carried by Kohanim, and I have 2,000 amot distance, and then I have the rest of the camp of Israel. The rest of the camp of Israel starts with who's first? Reuven, because he's the chalutz. Unlike how they went through the Midbar, which was Yehuda, after the story of the request for Ever HaYarden, Reuven goes first because they're the chalutz. So you have Reuven together with Gad. What happened to Shimon is a story and a half. Then Yehuda and Ephraim and Dan. So there are two anomalies. The distance of the ark, the place of the three anomalies, the distance of the ark, the placement of the ark, and who's carrying the ark. In the desert, the ark traveled in the middle and was carried by the Levim. Crossing the Yarden, the ark travels first and is carried by Kohanim. What do these differences reflect? What exactly is transpiring here versus what's transpiring here, vis-a-vis the Aron?
You said last time that this was like the time when Hashem said he was going to take care of the war.
By Yericho. We're not at Yericho yet. We're getting towards Yericho, but Kriyat Yarden has a different is independent of
but
right. The parallel is to Kriyat Yamsuf. The parallel is clearly to Kriyat Yamsuf. In a number of places, there are analogies to Kriyat Yamsuf. That's our next part of the discussion, which is all of the psukim that link us to Kriyat Yamsuf in terms of the impact it has on Ameknan, Vayimas. Levavam, the fact that their hearts melted, the impact that has leman dat kol ameh haaretz ki kel chai bekirbachem, that all the nations of the world should know, the impact of Kriyat Yarden is very similar to the impact that Kriyat Yamsuf was supposed to have. That's certainly part of it.
The Aron and then the Nais and then the relationship with the Kohanim to God.
Okay, let's put it all together. When the Aron traveled in formation, how did it travel? Carried by the Levim. What else do we know about how it traveled?
In the middle.
What else do we know about how it traveled? No, the Aron was never in pieces. The Aron was never taken apart. Right? The Mishkan was in pieces. The other Kalim were in pieces. The Aron was never taken apart. But it was Somebody whispered it. Covered. Aaron was always covered. The Levium could never carry the Aaron open. The Kohanim carried the Aaron. Well, we'll get to the how the Kohanim carried the Aaron. But the Levium always carried the Aaron closed. They would go in first backwards, cover the Aaron with a large tchelet cloak. Then they would take the Aaron out and they would travel with it together with the menorah and the shulchan and the wood of the mishkan and the mizbeach and everything else that traveled in formation. I have an intuitive sense, and it never says it anywhere, but I have an intuitive sense that the Aaron here traveled open. A, because it's carried by the Kohanim. B, because it's 2,000 cubits in front of everybody else. What's going on here? When we walked through Yam Suf, we walked through with the sense of most powerful phrase in Shirat HaYam is Hashem Ish Mechama. God is a God of war, is a man of war. Hashem Yilachem Lachem Atem Tachavishon. When we walked through the Yam Suf, we had an Amud Esh that stood between the Mitzrim and Bnei Yisrael, this pillar of fire. Hashem Yilachem Lachem B'Mitzrayim, where the God is fighting the Egyptians. When we walked through the Yarden, we walked through with that same prominence, that same sense that God was walking in front of us, that God was leading us, that God was directing us, more so for the Amei Knan to understand than for us. More so for the nations to recognize. It's essentially a reenactment of Kriyat Yam Suf. It has to achieve the same power and impact that Kriyat Yam Suf achieved. The rest of the nations are going to look at this and frightened out of their boots. There'll be a pillar of water. We're going to talk about how high that pillar of water is that everybody saw. But I think more important than the pillar of water, what everybody saw was an ark walking in front of the people, which represented the Aron Brit Hashem. How many times does it tell us that the Ark is the Aron Brit Hashem? The fundamental difference between the Aron here and the Aron here is that when you walked in formation in the desert, the Aron was carried as a utensil of the Mishkan. And it was part of a sequence of utensils. You had the Aron, you had the Mishkan, you had the menorah, you had the shulchan, you had the mizbeach haktot, you had the mizbeach hazav, you had the wood of the Mishkan. All of the different pieces of the Mishkan, all taken apart, the Aron is dismantled, and it gets carried together. The Mishkan is dismantled, and it all gets carried together. Where is the Shechina? Where is the Shechina that the Anana Kavod that's leading them? At the front. It's not hovering over the Aron. Aron is covered. The Aron is no different from any other kli in the Mishkan at that point and can be carried by the Levium and functions as one of the kelim in the Mishkan. Here, it's a very different issue. Here there's 2,000 cubits between them and the Aron. And they're not allowed to approach it. When was the last time we had to keep our distance from something and weren't allowed to approach it? Marmanai Sinai. When the Shechina was atop of the mountain, ke'esh ochelet berosh ahar, and the people were told, hagbelet ahar v'kidashto, surround the mountain, separate it, designate it, you're not allowed to touch the mountain, not allowed to come close to the mountain, had to keep a distance from the mountain. You can't approach the Shechina. The Shechina is not a business as usual operation. You can't simply just walk along the side of the Shechina and expect to survive to tell the story. So when the Aaron walks in front of them, open with the Shechina, with the divine, with the cloud, with the fire, with everything that comes with it, the Kohanim are carrying the Aaron, not the Levium. The Kohanim are as if they're standing in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's as if the Kodesh HaKadoshim is open before the entire people, intentionally so. The Esh and the Anan and everything that comes with it, but then it has to be separated 2,000 cubits. The people have to prepare themselves. When they went to Mount Sinai, there were 3 days of preparation. When they went to cross the Yarden, hit kadashu, separate yourselves, prepare yourselves, because tomorrow you cross the Yarden. The the concept of the crossing of the Yarden wasn't simply a mechanism by which to cross the sea or cross the river. Crossing of the Yarden was, for all intents and purposes, a revelation or a manifestation of the Shekhinah equal to and in parallel to Maimon HaSinai itself. It was almost as if part one, the preparation stage of the reenactment of Maimon HaSinai. I say part one because we'll get to part two in a few weeks. But they're back at HaSinai. They're back at the manifestation of the Shekhinah. They're back at the Aron open before the people, 2,000 cubits away. The Aron will carry them into the sea. The Aron, the Kohanim, will put their feet into the water and the water will split. The people will cross, will pass them by, and the Kohanim will be the last ones out of the water. And the moment kapot raglei kohanim, the moment their feet touch dry land, the water will restore, will come back, because the kohanim are carrying the aron. They're not carrying a utensil in the Mishkan. They're carrying aron brit Hashem. They're carrying the ark with the Shekhinah hovering over it, with the Esh, the Anan, the whole bit. That's where the aron is. That's where the kohanim are carrying it. That's why it's 2,000 cubits in front of the people. That's why there's a separation. That's why its sequence is to take it out of the middle of the formation and bring it to the front. It's a completely different functionality to the Aron. Placement, context, the ritual of who carries the Aron, these are all components of the functionality of the Aron, and they change. The placement of the Aron in formation will change its functionality and purpose. And if the Aron is going before the people, it's going to lead them into battle because the Shekhinah is walking before them. The Shekhinah is fighting this, is going to split the Yarden, and the Aron carries the Shekhinah with it. And therefore the Kohanim have to lead it. So when Chazal connected these two concepts, the distance and formation of the Aron and the fact that the Kohanim are carrying it, that what they're really doing is giving us the clue to understanding this, the structure of the way in which they crossed the Yarden.
When they got across, the Kohanim were the last to come out, and what happened?
Then we'll deal with the stones. There's a whole ceremony with the stones. Then they prepare for the battle against Jericho. I assume at that moment they put the Aron back into the Mishkan till they received further instructions. And the further instructions in Perek Vav was, okay, now we go to the conquest of Jericho. And in the conquest of Jericho, the Aron will come out again. And will be carried by the Kohanim. And will go before the people. The only difference there is that Reuven will go before the Aron. So we'll talk about why when we get there. But that's the only difference. Otherwise, it's the same structure as here. I just put Reuven in front. Questions? Okay. And we will stop here. The next piece that I want to do is address the reasons for the need, the necessity, the achievement, the accomplishment of crossing the Yarden. Why was it necessary, A, to cross the Yarden so miraculously, and what was achieved through that process? And the text itself gives me the answers. We saw when we read the Psukim, but the Psukim offer four or five different reasons for the crossing of the Yarden. So the Psukim talk about Laman, Da'at kol ameh ha'aretz et yad Hashem, that all the nations of the world, or the nations of the land, should know God's hand. And at the same breath, talk about Laman yira'atem et Hashem elokechem kol hayamim, so that you should fear God all of your days. The Psukim talk about Yehoshua's role, Hayom achel gadelcha be'enei kol Yisrael. I will make you great in the eyes of Israel, so that all of Israel will know that as I was with Moshe, I was with you. So there's all kinds of different agendas operating simultaneously, and they're not mutually exclusive. There are multiple achievements through the experience of the crossing the Yarden. I want to explore all of them. And so that's our next topic of discussion. B'zot Hashem, keep these source pages, bring them back. B'zot Hashem next week. And we will.
I also really enjoyed your class last night. You not only told
thank
it to
you.
Me, you then got on the phone and told it to Nigel. So you did it twice.
That's called Chazara.
Right.